100 days on the place, yeah, man. It's a kick it, you know. That's right.
Yeah, me rolling and rock it to the beat, and me love the sound.
Oh, Chess, you can mess with the sound. Better grab your girl, your posse, and gather round.
Yeah, me rolling and bobbing and going like a mad man. Oh, the man got the sweet day off and 19 no long, so me say.
Hey, 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 Digital Sister back on my regular night. Nothing came up, so I could drop the podcast. Oh, thanks so much for continuing to listen and for continuing to have the podcast grow. Hello to my new friends in Milan and my old friends in Santiago, Chile, across the United States, and really all across the globe. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Well, let me start out with I think is perhaps one of the most pressing issues that we can talk about is this whole issue with the nuclear test with North Korea that happened earlier this week. I find it interesting because there was a little ticker tape information about the fact that this test had occurred. I believe it was Sunday morning, but I was kind of surprised that the media didn't really pick up too much on the story. I was really surprised that there wasn't a lot more coverage than I think that there should have been. And I think about the few days before and how much coverage there was for the whole issue with Mark Foley and the scandal with the pages. So it kind of makes me wonder, are we in the U.S. media so confused about what really is important and what can wait? Because to me, I think North Korea doing a nuclear test kind of takes precedent over whether or not Dennis Hastert, Speaker of the House, is going to keep his job, or for Mark Foley, who was no longer a member of Congress. You know, it just makes me wonder what we focus on and what we think is important and what we think is valuable news. I find the whole issue rather frightening, and it's interesting to think that here is North Korea that's been thumbing its nose at the United States in particular, but in some of the other allied forces around the world, and you know, they actually tested it. And you know, I'm wondering, not that we all have to go to war, but there should be some kind of acknowledgement that this is not a good thing. And I go back to the whole thing with Iraq. Saddam didn't test a nuclear bomb. He didn't do a lot of things, and yet, you know, we invaded his country and took military action, and yet we have instances of Pakistan and India going through some tensions because India was going to be testing its nuclear weapons. You have Iran, who's thumbing its nose at the world body, doing some nuclear work with that, enriching the plutonium, which leads to actually making nuclear weapons. And I just find it very scary that here is a country that actually did it, and they're still being diplomatic and trying to figure out what the punitive actions will be. And then there's a situation like Iraq, where there was no bomb tested, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and yet there was occupation, military action, and an ongoing war. So it makes you wonder why some situations dictate military action, and why some situations that perhaps should have some kind of action. I don't want to say that I advocate, you know, going to war and having five or six wars going on at the same time with the rest of the world and the wars that are going on, but it just makes you think, what are we doing, and what are the priorities, you know? It's just, I don't know, I think it's very, very scary, and I think we're in an atmosphere now because of certain actions with other countries that is allowing other countries, so-called, quote, third world countries, to develop nuclear arms because they feel it is their right to do so. And they don't like the fact that other more powerful countries are telling them not to do it. So I think we're in a scary atmosphere with the nuclear race going on again. It's kind of quiet to some degree, but I think it's going on. And I think that our world leaders need to come together and figure out a way to put this stuff away, because we only share one planet, which is Earth, and really only one country has ever suffered a nuclear attack, which was Japan with Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's just devastating from the pictures that you see when that happened in 1945 to end World War II. We're just in a very, I think, scary time. And we're in a time where every piece of diplomacy must absolutely be utilized, because now we have so many, as I say again, third world countries developing nuclear arms. And some of them have some fanatical political beliefs, and it won't take much to get them to do things. So I think there has to be a concerted effort, even more so, to stop it. And I think some of our more powerful world leaders, I think, also must look at themselves to see how their actions have contributed to an atmosphere where now other countries are racing to start a nuclear arms race. And I think that that's got to change, because we don't need, you know, dozens of countries having the nuclear capability to wipe out other countries. And we don't need other countries feeling that they have the right to do that. I mean, they do have the right, but we just need a different atmosphere. And I guess what I'm trying to say is the atmosphere, and I'll say it, the atmosphere that the United States has created by invading Iraq, basically for no good reason, has, I think, created some unintended consequences where these other so-called third world countries feel that they should be developing nuclear arms. So they're basically kind of thumbing their nose at the West, and many of them are feeling the need to do this on the basis of feeling that their religion is being persecuted. I'm talking about with some of the Islamic countries, that they feel that the war that the West waged, there's some alliteration with the W's there, has created this atmosphere where they're saying that, you know, the West is not going to tell us what to do. We're going to develop these nuclear arms and have nuclear capability just like you guys. And how dare you tell us what to do? And see, that is the atmosphere, I think, that the invasion of Iraq has caused. And somehow or another, our diplomats have got to work to change that and change the atmosphere. Because we're moving into an atmosphere of fear. We're moving into an atmosphere where everybody is getting ready with a nuclear weapon. And we all know that if these come to other countries, it's going to be World War III. And it will be incredibly devastating, because there's just too much technology going on. So I'm just frightened at the thought that this is occurring. But I'm hoping that the world body, and I'm hoping that North Korea will, you know, step back and decide not to pursue this further. And I hope that there can be some diplomatic resolution like there was when Pakistan and India were kind of almost coming to blows, you know, almost a year ago. So we've got to do something to change the atmosphere that has breeded this. And we have to look at some of the more powerful countries that have contributed to this. And it needs to change, because we only share one planet. There's no place else to go if every country has a nuclear weapon and points it at a country that they have some kind of conflict with. You know, we won't have a world. So we've got to stop it like ASAP now. Okay, let me get off of that heavy stuff and get on to some more other topics that I think we should call some attention to. Let's move into music, because there seems to be a lot going on right now with music. The punk venue in New York City in the Bowery, CBGB's, is closing after 33 years. And, you know, it's only really closing because basically it's a landlord tenant problem. The landlord's not going to renew their lease, and there's really not much more that they can do. The guy who's been running it, his name is Hilly Crystal, and for some of you that don't know it, CBGB's was started way back in like 1973, 75, that kind of era, and it really was the place that a lot of talent that we know now got their start. Blondie, you know, Deborah, Harry, and Blondie, Talking Heads, the Ramones, Lou Reed, people like that, you know, got their start at CBGB's. And it's really sad because what I'm guessing, because I used to live in New York a long time, is, you know, things are getting so expensive there, and it's becoming more Disney, not to knock Disney, but it's becoming more Disney. And a lot of the old places, like on the Bowery and things like that, they're all being gentrified. So clubs like this don't exist anymore. And what happens? They just build some luxury condominiums or something like that. So part of the flavor of New York and the history with some of the music is gone forever, and it will never, ever come back. So what's happening is he's going to move CBGB's out to Las Vegas, and it probably will do well there because of the way, you know, people come. And remember, they had that casino, New York, which looks like the skylight of New York. So it probably will do very well there. But it's sad that a venue with such history in New York City is going to go away. And it's sad that despite the fight that some high-profile backers like Little Stevie Van Zandt and some other people tried to keep it open, but in the end, it comes down to a simple landlord-tenant dispute. And if you know anything about New York City, there's always some kind of conflict with tenants and the landlords, being that the landlords generally want a whole lot more money and tenants, you know, generally can't pay it. And so the power is with the landlords, and that's what we see here. So that's kind of sad that that's going away, but we're really glad that we had at least 33 years, because there's some great, incredible talent that came through those doors. So we wish Hilly Crystal great luck as he takes CBGB's out to Vegas, and it probably will get a whole new life with a little different bit of a focus. Let's move on. So let's get into some hip-hop news, because it looks like Ciara is going to be going on a tour, a 16-city club tour. And she'll be starting off October 26th in Washington, D.C. And let's see, she's going to be going to Chicago, Tempe, Arizona, Las Vegas, San Diego, Indianapolis, Allentown, Pennsylvania, Denver, Claremont, California, New York, and Atlanta. She's a multi-platinum singer, and it will be very interesting to see how she does, because as you know, sometimes when a lot of hip-hop stars go on tour, the tours don't go so well because a lot of them really are not singers. They do very well in the studio in a very controlled environment. But when they have to go on tour live, you know, that's a whole other ball of wax. So it's going to be interesting to see if she can hold her own and do good with the tour. And, you know, maybe that will open up for more female hip-hop artists to actually go out on tour and be successful. Mary J. Blige just came through town and her tour was very successful. But you really don't hear too many other female artists going out on tour. So good luck to Ciara. We hope she does good, and we hope that's going to open the door for some other female hip-hop artists to go out on tour and do very good with that. Well, here's some other interesting information that I thought was just very important that I wanted to talk about. It seems as though the Congress has been given a resolution by Representative Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut to recognize the African-American spiritual as a national treasure. And there's all kinds of resolutions that go with this to make this happen. And I was very fascinated with this and delighted that there's also a companion bill in the U.S. Senate, which was sponsored by Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey, which acknowledges the African-American spiritual as a national treasure and expresses, and I quote, "the deepest gratitude, recognition, and honor to the former enslaved Africans in the United States for their gifts to our nation." I think that wording is great, and I think the acknowledgement is great. You know, we may never get reparations, but I think by making this resolution and making the spiritual a national treasure, that's really acknowledging the value that the formerly enslaved Africans brought to this country, and how despite that they was against the law for them to learn how to read, and they didn't know the language, they couldn't really speak English, they found a way to communicate, and they communicated through song, and all those songs really talked about their desire for freedom, and those songs are still with us, you know, many hundreds of years later. So I commend the Congress, and I commend the Senate for even entering this bill for consideration. And I hope that that both houses take it up and they do vote to make it a national treasure. But I thought that was very interesting that there is a movement to make that happen. Another interesting thing is that the National Endowment for the Arts also recognized seven jazz masters and gave them awards for the work that they do. Jazz, you know, is one of those mediums, types of music that was also created in the United States, New Orleans, as a matter of fact. And it's great that it's getting the recognition that it should get. Now, we won't see, you know, them on the BET Awards or the VH1 Awards or the MTV Awards, but the National Endowment for the Arts has at least given seven jazz masters this award. Let's see, we have big band leader Toshiko Akiyoshi, Ramsey Lewis is one of my favorites, and vocalist Jimmy Scott. There were some other ones, but those are the ones that they really talked about primarily. So I think it's great. And these are people that don't usually get recognition. There's Curtis Fuller, hard bop trombonist, jazz tenor saxophonist Frank West, alto saxophonist Phil Woods, and jazz writer, educator Dan Morgenstern, who was selected in the jazz advocacy group. And this is pretty neat because it includes a $25,000 fellowship, and each one of the jazz masters receives that. And let's see, The NEA has named about 94 jazz masters since launching the awards in 1982. I didn't know it was around that long because, again, like I said, it's not on cable, you know. But I'm glad that the jazz masters get recognized because a lot of times we forget and we tend to think that smooth jazz is the only jazz, and it's not. There were lots of other artists way before some of the more popular smooth jazz artists that we hear today who don't always get recognized and whose music, you know, for the most part, you don't really get to hear unless it's a special program on some radio station or if you happen to tune into some older jazz somewhere on cable TV. But a lot of times you're not going to really get to hear that music. So I'm real glad that the National Endowment for the Arts recognizes the jazz masters. I think that's great. Well, we have something else going on with radio personality. Actually, he's a musician. His name is Gary Taylor. He's an old school, you know, R&B soul kind of guy, but he's taken on the issue of addressing why good music is hard to come by on the radio, and how most of these you know, black stations are basically playing, you know, five songs. And I have to agree with that because there's a station, it's a real kind of, not hardcore, but it's a hip-hop station in Cleveland that I listen to, you know, just to get a feel for it. And it just blew me away that they're playing, I mean, like one song they played at least about three times within the hour, and it came down to about that. You know, five songs that they kept playing over and over and over again. And I kept saying, I just heard that, you know. But if I'm hearing that just in one station in Cleveland, I know across the country it's the same kind of thing. And so anyway, what Gary Taylor's done, he's written an open letter on blackamericaweb.com, and I'm going to keep up with him because he's going to address, you know, Tom Joyner and that kind of thing. You know, he's just really talking about he's an independent, he's had to become independent because of the nature of the music business and how difficult it is for him to get his music played. And one of the reasons why his music wasn't getting played is that one independent program developer did actually call him back and tell him that, you know, you're independent, we only play the top 15. But he's also talking about how the corporate world is dominating music and determining what gets played versus back in the day when it was the consumer and the listener of music and radio that really drove what was being played. So this is going to be very interesting. He's got a three-piece series coming out, so I'm going to stay on top of that and hear what he has to say. But he does raise some good questions. You know, why is it that good music isn't being played? A lot of us complain about black women being called B's and H's and all that kind of stuff. But yet, when there's music that can override that, it doesn't get the airplay that the more popular hip-hop stuff that does get played. So he's raising, I think, some interesting questions, and I'm going to keep up with this, and I'll talk about this over the next couple of podcasts as this comes up. And I will really be interested to see what he says about Tom Joyner, because, you know, Tom Joyner, his show rules, you know, black radio. So it'll be interesting to see what he says about Tom Joyner. It'll be interesting to see if there's any, you know, jealousy or envy mixed in there because Tom Joyner does rule. So it'll just be interesting to see what he says. And then I think the other point will be interesting to see is if he says all of this, will that change the fact that we will hear his music on the radio, or will he be, you know, banished because he raised these issues? But his name is Gary Taylor. I'll keep you abreast of what he writes about because I do think it's a good discussion and something that perhaps black radio should wake up and take heed to and move back to, you know, listening to the listening audience versus, you know, the corporate end looking at what's going to make the most money. So interesting discussion. We'll see what happens. I remember what I talked about a few podcasts ago about how hip-hop is becoming so mainstream now. Well, when you look in some of the reviews, like in USA Today, I have to say just about every time they do this, there's always a rap artist mentioned. And in this case, it's like this whole big picture of Lloyd Banks, who's of the G-Unit, and his new CD is called Rotten Apple. He's out of 50 Cent's camp. And basically, what he's saying is the record sales are a little bit slow because, you know, it's the same theme. You know, talks about fast women, flashy jewels, flashing guns play out over some music. So, you know, it's the same kind of theme with a different type of track and different type of music. I mean, that's why the record sales are slow. When they come out with something a little different, then that's going to change. But if all of the rappers are singing about the same kind of stuff, I mean, you're going to have some really dynamic music to set yourself apart. But in any way, he's got this new CD out called Rotten Apple, and it's going to be interesting to see if people are really wanting this, or are they going to turn to something else? But here's a big picture of him. I just couldn't believe it. You know, they usually don't even have a picture of the hip-hop stars, but here's a big picture of him. So that speaks very much of how hip-hop has become so mainstream right now. Now, let's check this out. Google has bought YouTube for something like $1.65 billion in an all-stock deal. I mean, that is just so incredible because YouTube, I don't think, is even a year old yet. If it is, it's just short of a year. But I think that speaks to how important video is to cutting new media, and the fact that the incredible number of videos that people are watching. It was launched in 2005. It grew overnight. I'm talking about YouTube. And it's the most popular place to watch videos. Some 100 million videos are watched daily, which is pretty, pretty incredible. And so what's happening now is, as this industry is shaking out, there's other issues coming out with copyright, and mostly copyright issues, because you're posting stuff, but who owns what, who's getting credit for what, yada, yada, yada. And you're going to see more and more of the corporations coming in, and that's going to change the flavor of things. So it's going to be interesting to see if YouTube can maintain that cutting edge industry with the video watching, and anybody coming on can watch videos, or will, again, corporate world take over and change the flow and make it something else. But I just think that just shows you how incredibly fast things are moving now, and how incredibly fast organizations like a Google are taking to be cutting edge and to stay cutting edge. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Well, let's look at this. The Runaway Bride is back in the news. Are we surprised? It turns out that she is suing her ex-fiancé for $500,000. Now, are we really surprised? Because remember when this stuff happened, when she, ran from her wedding and made up this story about being kidnapped and all this stuff going across country. It turns out that, you know, in the end, they broke up. We weren't surprised, because at first he was talking about how he loved her and I just want her back and yada, yada, yada. Well, you know, it turns out girlfriend's got some screws loose, but not totally loose, because she's trying to sue him for $500,000. She's seeking $250,000 for her share as the home they bought with the proceeds of the $500,000 they received for selling their story to Reagan Media in New York. She also wants $250,000 in punitive damages for alleged abuse of power that was granted to her ex-fiancé for handling their financial affairs. I mean, you have to wonder about this chick. Now, if she was going to go through all that trouble of ducking you to marry you, you know, are you surprised that she's suing you? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. But it just shows you, I think, the character of her and what she's all about. And, you know, before her family was, you know, supporting her and all this, but this time around, you know, her father made no comment. People aren't really saying too much about this. I think on some hand, you're surprised that she would do this, but on the other hand, you're really not. So, it's just amazing. You know, when love goes sour, love goes really sour. Now, here's something in the news that I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure out, but I think a lot of people today have forgotten. Remember when we were growing up, we could play, we could go outside with a bag of marbles and create something fabulous. We could go out in wintertime and cut up snow and make igloos and ice castles and things like that. You could go in a sandbox and create something. You can go on the beach and make sandcastles. That was called play. That was like being creative, being inventive. But what's happened today is kids don't know how to play anymore. You know, everything's so organized for them. You know, they're organized to go here. They're organized to go here. Then there's so-and-so's party down the street. Kids today don't know how to play. And I saw that firsthand because I teach anger management, and I had to go teach some conflict resolution to some kids in an after-school program. And it was a beautiful sunshine day, and the teacher had them out playing kickball. You know, great game, very active. But it turned out that the game was cut short because why? The kids didn't know how to play together. They couldn't keep their attention span on the game because there were too many interpersonal conflicts. They were arguing with each other and fighting with each other, and nobody was concentrating on the game. So what happened? The teachers just said, you know what, we're just going back inside. And so here was a beautiful day that they could have been outside having a good time, had to go back inside because they didn't know how to play. And that is a situation that's replicated all across this country. Kids don't know how to play. And I think that's a factor in a lot of these shootings, because they don't know how to play, they don't know how to have conflict, they don't know how to get along. So when somebody steps on your toe, so to speak, instead of having the skills to resolve the conflict, you know, you'll pick up something and stab them, or go back and get a gun and shoot them. That is the root cause for so much of this crazy violence with the kids. They don't know how to play together. And I fault a lot of the, I fault stuff at home, but I also fault the fact that the schools are so strapped financially that they're having to cut out the sports and things like that, where kids can learn that kind of behavior. They can learn to work as a team, where they can learn how to play a sport and learn how to get along. So, you know, it's a two-edged sword, you know. We've taken away some things so that they can't learn how to do it, but then we have to put it back so that they can. And then parents, I think, we have to get away from constantly having their time arranged to just like having some time where they can play and mingle and be creative and learn how to solve problems and things like that. So playtime is real essential and very necessary, and I think that we have to get back to that and move away from everything being planned and structured, so much so that they don't know what to do if you put them on the floor with a bag of marbles, you know? They wouldn't know what to do. It's amazing to me. Truly amazing to me. Well, anyway, I don't want to go off too much tonight, but I just wanted to share a couple of insights with some topics I think are very interesting. Again, thank you for listening, and for tuning in and for passing the podcast around. I'm going to be back with you in a few days, and we will continue on our very interesting and fascinating discussions. Have a great week. Digital Sister signing out. I'll be back with you in a few days. Have a great week.
The West Side, we're riding. The West Side, 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 the West